1950s, and there were several different law enforcement agents who infiltrated. Actually, a couple of them got arrested doing civil disobedience with other activists, with the real activists, mm-hmm. and then they went to the lawyer meetings. When that came out in court, the cases against over 300 people were dismissed mm-hmm. because the police had spied, but it was only because the police had spied on the activist and lawyer meetings. So there may be ways for groups to use that as some protection.
And that was an interview with local Santa Cruz lawyer and author of the book Beat the Heat, Katya Komisarek. For more information, visit www.lawcollective.org.
Think tank cops and undercover cops, security surveillance and secret service cops, cops walking a beat and cops driving through the street. It's a world full of cops.
Santa Cruz police doing their best.
City cops and state cops and National Guard and Bureau cops and TV cops and movie cops and uniform and plainclothes cops and riot cops and cops and top of cops and top of cops and top of cops.
I'm not going to jail.
Very easy. It's in custody and needs to comply. Very simple.
Be a lawyer.
Well, that's it for Sprouts this week. You've been listening to Surviving Police Encounters. We heard music from Paleface, A World Full of Cops. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by the Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts and to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's U-R-S-U-L-A at pacifica.org. This week's producer was yours truly, Skidmark Bob, from Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM and freakradio.org. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Coming up next, Bathurst Pier's Broadside. Stay tuned.
Downtown on a Saturday, on May 6th, day after Cinco de Mayo, here in front of artisans at the parking lot panic petition table. With a man signing the petition here. Sir, where are you from?
Santa Cruz.
And what do you think of this proposed new law, which is designed to protect the security of parking lot attendants, customers, tourists, and Santa Cruz residents?
It's just ridiculous. Controlling people, can't even have any space to move around. Yeah, it's like, whose town is it?
Wait a minute, don't you trust our city council fathers and mothers?
Are you kidding me?
Unfortunately, I'm not. I appreciate your signature. If you want to take a flyer, you can.
Talking with a woman who just signed the petition, your name?
Martha Barton.
And Martha, you say that this has some familiar ring to it, this parking lot panic law, as I call it?
Yes, I lived in El Salvador for 6 years. My dad was an ambassador there in the 70s. And visited Guatemala for a weekend, and there was martial law over the weekend, and the police came in and searched everything.
Really?
Because they're making art in a way that displeases the town hall posts.
Let me go check that out. Becky, keep an eye on this over there back. This is about to blow away.
I'll be the artist.
Well, I'm walking down the street past the Rouge O'Neill and the Bubble Lounge. You see a police car up there with lights on. Apparently, some sort of arrest may soon be in progress, but maybe not. Sketcher on the street there, and here's a handmade local art, needs support, and there's another political table. Lots of folks out on this Saturday. This looks like a karmic table of some kind. Now we're crossing Cooper Street. A police officer in shorts is approaching, and we'll just see what's cooking. Possibly we should follow the police officer because he's headed in that direction. His car is double parked near Bookshop Santa Cruz. So let's just see what's happening here. He's on the little telephone. And this is packing up his Cooking with Kerma books. Putting on his coat. Looks like the arrival of the police officer may have... So are you leaving because of the arrival of the police officer?
No.
Okay.
We come here regularly, so...
Okay, what are you doing here? What kind of stuff do you do?
We distribute books, so we don't sell them, so we are perfectly legal. We give them free.
Fair enough. What's your name?
My name is Avi.
Okay. And how can folks learn more? Let me check out what's happening up here. I'll talk to you in a minute, Ali, or perhaps next time.
So we're trying to understand, like, what's wrong with this in relation to the pamphlet that we were given.
And the yellow pamphlet handed out by the hostility center is being examined by Officer Albert.
We're not selling any of this. Like, none of this is merchandise.
Looking at a sort of display which has some clothing on it and some bracelets, and some folks are doing some painting. And
the problem is when you set up a display, it has to be non-commercial. Non-commercial is defined by the city as public service, as political, civic, or religious.
This is very political.
How is this political?
Because we're standing up for the right to make art anywhere and be supported by the public.
But political means a specific political cause. That's more like a freedom of expression.
Well, it is a specific political cause.
It's
saying it's a collective cause.
That's
why? He's showing a statement of a mission statement.
For our political movement to keep art supported by the community.
That's not really a political movement. That's more of like a public...
Political religion, too. It's
that's
religion.
Not religious.
Yeah, it is.
Not
This
is
a violation of the
municipal code. You've been told yesterday, and we didn't have time to deal with it yesterday, but you can't be setting up a display asking for donations.
Yeah, you can. It says right there.
It's around artwork, I believe you can.
Or religious reasons.
Can I have that back?
What's civic?
Civic is like government funded.
And so you're saying that...
You guys
like,
have some items that you made, or that you're trying to get rid of, you're asking people for donations for them, right?
We're allowing people to look at anything here and take anything that they want.
Right. So you can do all that stuff, but you can't set up an elaborate display to do that.
But what constitutes an advertisement? We're within the 3x6x6
That's for the political, religious, and civic.
And what's happening here is Officer Albert is confronting three women who are have a sort of a rack with a bunch of T-shirts with different designs on them, kind of different. I'm not quite sure if the message, it looks like there are messages on the T-shirts or artistic emblems, and they're asking for donations, not selling them. Now, apparently there was some complaint from a merchant or maybe some general decision by the beat officer to make this choice as Officer Albert. But, of course, he's telling them that their display does not fall under 5.42, which is the municipal code which allows for non-commercial displays. Even though they're giving away items that they put their own artwork on for donation. And I suggest that this is the officer's misreading the law. The officer's also suggesting that because they have a display device, that this is somehow especially illegal. I guess the implication is that all this stuff was sitting on the sidewalk, it might be more legal to give it away for donation. As it transpires, as you listen to what happens, you'll find out that the different beat officers have been giving these women, according to their account, different instructions. Indeed, even Officer Albert changed his instructions. Again, leaving us to understand that the real law on Pacific Avenue isn't even the crazy written downtown ordinance law, which criminalizes all kinds of innocent behaviors, and is actually part of it's coming up for a city council vote next Tuesday, about which more soon. But rather, it's the decisions of the police department as to what goes on Pacific Avenue. Unless you want to go to court several times, sacrifice whatever you have with you into evidence while that's happening, and subject yourself to scrutiny and harassment by the police department. That, of course, has been a problem for years on Pacific Avenue, and the response of the city council has been to give the police more power.
This isn't calling any of that. Political, civic, religious, or other public service or charitable activity, including speech or distribution of literature.
Well, who's the expert? Why don't you ask him?
Where the use is conducted. Either for the sale of merchandise or the solicitation of donations. So it is included under 5.43. Let me see. Check it out.
Always useful to have a copy of the code.
If they're getting donations for their own handiwork, and they can't bring down T-shirts and sell them down here, obviously, that way. But if they make their own stuff.
You haven't made this. This is stuff from someone's garage that they're trying to sell.
No, these are all being worked on, all of these. They all have paint.
So they all have artwork prints on them. I'd say it's a gray area. Speaking as a legal expert on this issue.
I mean, bottom line is that people love what we're doing.
I understand that. I'm not here because people don't like it. You can't, people from all over can't all of a sudden come down to Pacific Avenue, set up all their stuff, and hand it out. It becomes a big flea market. This is a big stand. It's taking up sidewalk space, and it doesn't necessarily fall under the political, religious, or civic.
I feel wholeheartedly 100% this falls under both political and religious. For me, I can say. I mean, if we have to, like, argue that by some guidelines that have been pre-established by the law of the city or whatever, that's a long, drawn-out process to come down to,
because if this persists, you're going to get a citation. You're going to have to go to court and then talk to the judge about that. See?
Actually, there are two women, maybe even three women and a man, who are kind of staffing this particular display area where they have some bracelets and some T-shirts and so forth. And Officer Albert, of course, is trying to persuade them to move along, get rid of their stuff, disappear, because perhaps he's been under some pressure from the merchants. Perhaps he just came up with a new perspective, because apparently either he or another officer gave them different instructions, as I said before, the day before.
He says, unfortunately, if you're found wrong, you're going to have to pay the citation for that.
You want to stop me?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Beverage?
Yeah.
You want? Spice coffee with
Seth. The party separated in hours of dispute over ownership of a bicycle.
Right. The argument here is they're not selling it. They're just displaying it.
Buy coffee.
I think you're within your rights to do this. In fact, given that, I will start making public announcements in about 2 or 3 minutes that there's harassment happening here. So that's my feeling. Even though the officer may sincerely think otherwise.
So kind of the issue that you're having with this is you don't think that this is political?
It's not for a political
cause. So you don't think that freedom of speech and freedom of artistic expression and public artistic expression is a political cause.
Those are all things that people want, but anyone can come down and start selling their Rolex watches and say, I'm selling this because it's a freedom of speech. But obviously, I'm selling the same thing. Political is for a certain political party. Independent Party, Republicans, people sitting on tables.
People down here for like feminism or animal rights or something like that. Do you have a political party?
No. Political, civic, or religious.
Yeah.
And actually, that is true, because there have been things where, and he can attest to this, where people have come down and tried to hand out safety things for children, children's night out, and he came up and demanded a citation for them because they were out of the guidelines.
Actually, what happened was the police department set up a table illegally near a shop where they'd previously ticketed someone else for setting up a table.
Right. But
it wasn't what they were doing. It was the fact that they were in the wrong location. That was the reason that I really had some concerns. It was the tables next to Marini's. It was within 10 feet of Marini's. It's not... I mean, I think there's a real argument here that we have... we're obviously working on art. I mean, that's pretty clear. And it's for donation. They're not selling it. So
you can't ask for donations with a display.
Now, where do you say that in the municipal code? I never saw that provision. I'm not trying to embarrass you. I'm just asking you that.
Now, is this the current municipal code?
It is. This is the current section on non-commercial use of the streets and sidewalks.
No person for any business or commercial purpose shall use any public place under the control of city centers where commercial display of merchandise is not regulated by another provision of this code.
Right. If it's commercial use, so that's the question.
Right, but asking for donations is kind of like commercial use.
Traditionally, asking for donations is charitable, because donations...
You're asking for donations. Your sign says need support.
Well, we do need support, but that doesn't mean that we're selling this. Like, you could pick up a fourth bracelet and take it with you.
Then why not take the sign down and just let people come up and give you donations if you want?
You'd be okay with this?
That was the whole argument with you guys 3 weeks ago.
I talked to you before. The sign had to have the word donation on it. I said, fix that. Make sure the sign says donation on it. The sign says donation on it twice now.
So some police officers are telling them you can have a sign that says donations as long as you're not selling,
but you can't put donations and then say need support.
And some officers are saying you can't put donations and then say
we do need support.
I understand that. So I need support too, but I'm not going to come down here and take my kids' stuff out of the garage and sell it on the table.
You guys take my kids' stuff out of the garage?
Huh? He's got so much stuff in his garage, I gotta have a garage sale for it. But I do that on my driveway, not on the streets of Santa Cruz.
So you're saying that if we take the sign down, we won't get harassed anymore today?
I don't know. Obviously, I'm not Mr. Expert on this code, so I'm going to have to talk to my supervisor about it, because we are getting more complaints about this. Because this is people saying you guys aren't supposed to be doing
it. Who's complaining? The businesses, or the people in the street, or the people who are part of the enforcement of the codes?
All of the above.
Okay.
Well, you should obviously abandon your art and move to Afghanistan. That's my advice.
I don't think that's true, what Officer Albert said, with all due respect. The idea that there were three separate groups of people complaining about this, or three separate individuals, is, I suppose it's possible. But, often police officers are not terribly forthcoming about, where the juice is coming from, particularly if it's coming from a merchant who's feeling cranky, who doesn't want to expose herself or himself, and who doesn't want to make out a citizen's arrest if they feel there's a violation. Instead, they send out the armed officer to scare away people from using rights that they actually, should be able to enjoy without that kind of intimidation. In the studio with me is a man I ran into, or perhaps he kind of chimed into me last night as I was wandering down Pacific Avenue. What's your name, sir?
My name is Leo Limas.
And Leo, you're a regular on Free Radio, or you're an occasional person on Free
Occasional,
Radio?
Occasional. I started I met with Biasso. He introduced me to Free Radio on Monday nights, Biasso's Freak Radio show. I forgot what it was called. But it started out a thing where I would just bring in CDs of music that I wanted to hear over the radio.
But you have been on the air before.
Yeah, we comment a lot. We do a lot of commentary. That was very reminiscent of other stuff that I also would
What
have.
You were listening to just now, the incident on the street with Officer Albert and the folks trying to sell the... trying to give away for donation the T-shirts, which the officer claimed was commercial activity. I suggested it was charitable activity. You're going to be kind of fading in and out occasionally throughout the show with some thoughts. I'm going to play some more of this tape, and maybe we'll eventually give you an opportunity to do a little rapping, which is, of course, when I ran into you, you were rapping it up. Maybe you can be inspired by some of the crap you hear on this show.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm always looking for inspiration. Yeah.
Let's go for it.
Sorry. Yeah. Afghanistan's an expensive move.
It's true, and a risky one as well.
Yeah. Try a safer spot.
Yeah, it'd be really useful to us if there could be some kind of consensus within, like, the law enforcement of, like, beat officers around here, because it doesn't feel, like, very fair.
But normally, we
you getting mixed messages about it, you know?
Who's is this? So, with all apologies, Officer Albert. There's harassment of artists happening here. Check it out, folks. Police officer telling artists they cannot give away material that they're working on for donations. Liberal Santa Cruz, right here, downtown.
Get your foot out of that planter, receiver.
Yes, sir. Check it out. Your taxpayer dollars work. Police car double parked up here while there perhaps are crimes elsewhere in the city. And the police are concerned with artists giving away their material.
It's a political movement.
Liberal Santa Cruz, think again. Take a look at what's happening downtown, folks. Right here, in front of your eyes, as you shop.
And that's me shouting to passing people to come over and take a look and see what's happening. Again, I have nothing against Officer Albert, the police officer involved. I actually made a report to three police officers today, a somewhat embarrassing report. My sticker car has been stolen. If you see anybody driving it around, go up to them and urge them to let me have the occasional use of it if you see it happening, passing by your neighborhood. It's a car completely covered with bumper stickers, and it is no longer in my possession. So I did actually make a police report to officers. Normally, I'm often in the business of criticizing. They were very courteous, and they were very correct. They took the report. And, you know, I think officers have a real place in the society in terms of, you know, meeting certain public functions, although I would like to see a different kind of community system operating. I think that given what we have, police officers have a legitimate function dealing with crimes of violence, if dealing with, you know, even some kinds of property crimes. I want my car back. You know, but in this situation, and frequently on Pacific Avenue, what you see are people being harassed essentially by another group of people who has greater power for in the exercise of their rights. Any thoughts on this subject?
Yeah, I do believe that there is very good use for police. I do believe that there are good cops who do find the inspiration to be one day, you know, protect people from, you know, bad stuff that, you know, happens randomly throughout the world, throughout America, and we do need someone to protect us. At the same time, we don't need people getting harassed when they're just simply doing, you know, simple little things that others might find a little irritating, but there's no aggressive force necessary at all. I believe that, you know, there are peaceful solutions, and I feel that when it is, like, something that might, you know, draw a little friction or something, you know, it's just not very handled right.
Hear, hear. So, a little more of this, and then who knows what else. If you want to call in, by the way, you can. You're listening to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM at 101.1 FM, that's for sure. And it's also freakradio.org. The phone number here is 427-3772. 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm here to take your calls. You can also go to pagesincolor.com and check out the chat room, or I can check you out. We can check each other out in case for some reason you don't want to call in or can't call in or got something else you want on your mind. If you want to catch me off air, there's another number to call. It's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, or 4833. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights organization I work with, and that's concerned with restoring rights of poor people. I invite you to call and volunteer time if you got time, or give us accounts of any bad shit you see going down in terms of harassment, discrimination, and so forth. Again, 423-HUFF for off-air messages to me. If you got want to talk to me, you want to get on the show, but you want to talk about it on the air, or you have some commentary you want to pass on to me, but maybe you don't want to say it at the moment, 423-HUFF. If you want to talk on the air, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And that's the number to call now. You can talk to me and Leon here in the studio, and away we'll go. You can also get in touch with Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail in case you want to leave a message, public service announcement, make a donation, ask a question, make a death threat, you name it. You know, we'll take it. We don't really welcome death threats. We prefer donations and other positive activity. The phone number there is 427-4523, 427-4523. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Also, if you want to become a part of the station, if you want to get a show or otherwise get involved, you can go to the website, freakradio.org. All one word, freakradio.org. More from the street, I guess, from Pacific Avenue. Here we go.
We're talking to Bob Pattenbach.
Yeah, just about 20 minutes ago before you came, I walked up on the scene where an unidentified woman, dark-haired woman, was telling these folks they were illegal and had to move on. She had no identification on her whatsoever, claimed that she was a host. She would not even give her name when asked, and ended up calling the police and walking away.
Oh, you are a public-minded citizen. So what's your name?
I'm Kim.
Kim, you're packing up to go?
No, I'm
just
putting this stuff up here so that these people can look at all the clothing here.
And so the three of you who are doing this display, this work of you're working on, I guess, your painting, and you also got some jewelry out here. How long have you been out here for?
About 10 minutes today, 15 minutes, maybe a little bit longer.
Okay.
And then you want some iced coffee?
Got harassed like 2 or 3 days ago, I think it was.
Out of that same officer, different officer?
I believe it was the same officer.
And what did he tell you at that time?
He told us we had to have this thing right here. He said, need support means that we're asking for money.
Handmade local art needs support, so he asked you to put donation on it?
Yeah, he asked us to put donation on it. We have to say donation on it, which we put twice.
Now the same officer came back and told you that that was still insufficient because his own words apparently have now changed in 2 days, or the rules have changed?
That's what it seems like.
So what's happening here is that, at least by Kim's testimony, I think that's her name, the sign needs support was ruled by Officer Albert to be inadequate, and that she had to add to it donation. When she did this, Officer Albert came back and now tells her that donation is an inappropriate. And I think the ultimate result of all this, since this is a pretty bad tape and kind of hard to hear, and I apologize for that, is that they agreed to continue without any sign whatsoever. This seems to me like the most gross kind of power tripping, or at least bungling, by police officers that I've. This is really standard, and this is not an attack on Officer Albert. These downtown ordinances are a major headache for everybody involved, because what they are, they're essentially a tool for whenever the merchants want to put pressure on somebody, they can. On the phone with us, Crow. Hi, Crow.
Hey, buddy. What's going on? Yeah, sorry to laugh about your car being stolen.
No problem.
Somebody's got to be either completely on fucking dope or out of their mind to steal your car. It's the most noticeable thing in Santa Cruz I've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, my car is very noticeable. You're kind of hard to hear on the air. I know whether it's the phone you're using.
No, it's this fucking phone. I've been here before.
Right.
Piece of shit.
So,
hey, and I'm going to buy you a new tape, too.
Oh, well, thanks.
I'm going to take it tonight and buy you a brand new cassette recorder.
How about a new tape? How about a new car?
You have a better chance of getting your car back than getting the tape recorder.
You're here.
But anyway, I ran into that family yesterday over at the farmer's market, and it's kind of a shame that they fuck with them because, you know, people at nighttime have been setting up their art.
Sorry, Crow, it's really hard to hear you. I mean, you said you ran into the family that was displaying these T-shirts that had the artwork on them.
Hey, let me go to another phone.
Okay.
I know this phone's fucked up.
Why don't you do that? No problem.
Bye.
I'll play a little bit more of this, then we're going to move on to the next criminal behavior downtown to examine the, I don't know, artistic shirt criminals we have known.
Support can mean anything. It can mean, you know, you coming up to me and giving me a hug and and telling me that, like, you know, you love me. That's good support, which, you know.
Have you gotten much support from the community here today?
Well, we've had you come up to us, and we've had this gentleman over here.
How about giving you, you know, actually donating money or other objects of value?
We haven't had any exchange of donations. Yeah. We've had several people come up and say that they liked what we were doing, and we have beautiful artwork, which we do.
And what's your name?
Clarice.
And what are you doing here?
Same thing as Tim.
Where's your permit, madam?
I left it at home, so.
I see. So, are you? How strong do you feel about this? If the officer wants to cite you, are you going to pack up and leave, take a citation, do both?
Hey, she's kind of menacing. When she came up and was with a black shirt on, she was nice and polite and professional, and everything she said was by the book, but it was that kind of like, you might want to consider moving on now, citizen. Kind of like...
Hey, now tell me what happened here.
Well, they set up their shit.
Your name, sir?
I'm Mad Dog.
Go ahead, Mad Dog.
And they set up their shit, and then it was like the nice lady with the black shirt came by and with no identification and jingled her keys and was like, you know, you better pack your little shit and get out of here. She didn't use any profanity, but I mean, it was very much like, you know, you really might want to think twice about crossing the Santa Cruz authority structure, you know, because it'll come down hard on you kind of vibe all the way. You know, don't even think about it, citizen.
And was this a downtown host, as they call themselves?
No, she had a black shirt on. She was some person who started ordering us off the sidewalk with a black T-shirt on. So she's, you know, if somebody acts like they're from the government, then you're supposed to be so scared you don't stop to question, all right? You know.
Thank you, Mad Dog.
You're most welcome.
Okay.
Read a book!
And I think that may be all for that particular incident. You're tuned again to Free Radio 101.1 FM. In case you have any thoughts on this latest activity or any announcements, I probably should make a few myself. Let me turn to the announcement situation, if I can actually do that without confusing myself too much. Let's see here. I'm having a little trouble finding what I'm looking for, but I will continue to look for it. Let's see here. Give me a moment. And again, I encourage you to consider calling in 427-3772. And let's see what we got here. There is, of course, Armed Farces Day coming up. There's a big parade on Pacific Avenue on Saturday. I think it starts at 11. Somebody came up to me today and asked if I wanted to be a part of a flag-burning ceremony that happens every year on the 1st of July or the 4th of July, and there was such a thing on the beach. And the idea here was, I guess, this was a stately ceremony done to show that the United States is still a free country because we're such a great democracy that you're allowed to burn a flag while they burn human flesh over in Iraq, you know, which is a cool thing to be able to do for all us sofa bed liberals here in Santa Cruz. I suggested that a much more potent message for this guy and for all of us, if anybody's got a flag and they want to do it, is to burn a flag on the corner of Cathcart and Pacific as these characters in their uniforms with guns are marching by. You know, the big floats and the proud patriotic crowds. That, of course, might subject you to a lynching, I would suggest. There's always that possibility. Or a beating, or certainly a lot of hisses and boos, or whatever. But this is a parade that's going to have no political messages allowed. And Vets for Peace, apparently, has bought into this bullshit. Believe it or not, that's what I hear. So you're going to have a parade celebrating the military. I'm sorry, the vets, right? In other words, when you talk about the SS or the Wehrmacht marching around in Russia, you say, I don't support Hitler, I just support our troops in Russia. No, no. You support the troops, you support the government. You know, it's the same thing, folks. If you're going to support human beings everywhere, you get the human beings, and you can call them troops, or, you know, minorities have been captivated by, you know, not quite forced labor, but, you know, job situations where, you know, hey, we got great jobs for you over in Iraq, or we're just going to put you in the National Guard for a little while, don't worry, all that kind of crap. But the fact of the matter is, you you demand an end to this madness, this criminal insanity. And, of course, it's not insanity for those who are making lots of money off of it. It's quite sane. But for the rest of us, it's criminal bullshit, and it's happening every day, and we don't, of course, see it because we're too busy running around after three jobs each. So any thoughts on that one yourself?
It's like they're just putting up a front that this is for the American people. We're doing this all for the better, you know, and it's just like nothing but lies and propaganda. And they're just trying to use their authority to their advantage, everything they can, you know. I was watching the news this morning. They had one of the guys from the CIA on trial or something.
Oh, there's a general who's now head of the NSA. Is now they're going to appoint him head of the CIA, believe. And he was the guy who promised that there would never be any, you know, spying on American citizens. And of course, he presided over the NSA while they overtly, or I should say covertly, and now overtly are spying on the country.
So. Yeah, and then like they got the Patriot Act, and it's like. They're trying to get rid of the terrorists, but you know who's going to patrol them and make sure not them themselves ain't.
But what about our own local situation where you have people glorifying terrorists in uniform? Now you might say these are just, you know, ordinary human beings who, you know, their families are trying to say, to remember their accomplishments and their deeds, and but you have to consider what this military force is doing overseas now, yesterday, and tomorrow, and the next day.
Next month.
You know, we got to consider what's happening there. And I would say, for all those folks who want to burn a flag, get your butts out to Cathcart and Pacific. If you're going to do it, call me up. I will show up as well. I don't know if I'll light the flag in there, but I'll be there. And we can see what we're going to do. But the fact of the matter is, that's the protest that has to be made. These are the people that have to be reached. How are you going to reach them? By antagonizing them, by burning the flag? Well, there's a question, too. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yeah, have you been hearing our discussion?
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Actually, I missed what you were talking about. I just peeked into my car to listen to your discussion about...
Armed Farces Day?
Oh, Armed Farces Day, but
right.
The spying thing. I wanted to talk about those kids, but just to keep to the subject, on July 2nd, I've created Burn a Flag for Jesus Day.
You don't want to move it up to Saturday, do you?
I guess.
You might get the shit beaten out of you if you did.
This is a burn a flag for, you know, any flag. You can like take a pic of a country and burn it. You know, just so Americans don't feel left out of the whole thing. You know, and because I was thinking of like doing July 2nd, burn a flag for Jesus Day, so we don't butt heads with the butt heads on July 4th. You know, that'd be particularly the best time to do it, but. I figured since, you know, a lot of people are celebrating and, you know, have fireworks in their hands, that would be actually more fodder for their war against you. But, you know, I feel if you burn a flag for Jesus, it really makes a great statement, especially for the religious people who really believe this country is somewhat, I guess, the savior for the world, which is absolutely makes me vomit.
Now, did you have any comments about the Kim and the other folks who were trying to distribute their stuff for donation?
Yeah, obviously they don't want people to come down there and do what they're doing.
Obviously.
And, you know, I've seen artists, you know, like spray painters at nighttime, you know, spray paint away and stuff, and they don't make any signs. But then again, there's guys sitting on the street corner says spare change, anything will help, blah, blah, blah. Host other little signs. But when it comes down to these little radical hippie kids or hippie group kids, you know, it's happened so many times over in the past, Robert, you know that, that it just irritates the piss out of them. You know, these shop owners just cannot stand that these little hippie kids will come down there and just hang out and you know, make some jewelry or something and either sell it or you know, exchange it for other stuff. And it's been going on for a long time, you know. This is nothing new.
Gotcha. So I know that we're going to actually be turning back to the parking garage paranoia law soon.
Oh, great.
As well as a second thing that's happening at City Council on Tuesday.
Correct.
And we'll be prompting a protest. It's kind of a double protest on Tuesday, not in front of City Council where there's usually seven people hanging around or something at most. Although the crowd gets a little thicker as the afternoon wears on, but in front of our old friend, the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which of course is right there downtown. What's the street? It's across from Locust.
You can have it on Coonery Day. Any Coonery will do.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The actual law. The two laws that we are going to be talking about is one law, that, of course, Ryan Coonerty's parking garage paranoia law. But then there's also Neil Coonerty. You may remember the elder Coonerty. Who I actually ran into Neil on the way over to the studio. I didn't hit him because I don't have a car anymore. But I'm
looking for it right now as he's speaking.
Right. Keep looking. Everybody out there, keep your eyes peeled. My car is
AWOL.
And I am SOL. I know, it's pretty bad. But, you know, Coonerty was out there canvassing the district. He is running, the elder Coonerty, the owner of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, for supervisor in the 3rd District. And I didn't take the opportunity to invite him on the show. I should have, because I think he needs to be held accountable for what he's done in the past. And the issues need to be raised. By the way, for those who are interested, he will be on Voices tonight. Voices is a community TV show that you can get. I think it's either Channel 25 or 27.
That's just not in an insane asylum?
Call it what you want. Voices. It's happening down, and you can also go to the actual studio on Pacific Avenue and join the studio audience. So if you want to ask questions of Crone, Coonerty, and Botel, the three supervisorial candidates will be running next month.
I would love to.
Go there and ask. You're not very far away. Go ask them. You know, go in there, knock on the door.
Are you going to be there?
I'm, unfortunately, it happens from 7:30 to 8:30, and I'm on the air, and I also have no car to get there.
I can take you over.
Right. Well, I mean, you should go over there. People should assemble at 7:30, and the main thing to ask Coonerty and Crone and Botel.
Why, they're such idiots?
No. Ask them. Ask the issues, because the issues are really what the community needs to face. I mean,
you're better at that than I am.
Well,
you'll go off of the lip.
I think you know the issues too. I mean, you consider the issues. What are these people going to do? They got huge amounts of money. For years, Wormhout apparently did not take an interest in getting the low-income part of the housing element, so she was denied millions of dollars each year. The county didn't get that because of her activity. Wormhout, of course, had no interest in dealing with the county sleeping ban, which is the similar laws to the city, though somewhat different. They don't actually have a law against sleeping, but rather in habitating one's vehicle. And they have trespass laws they use, and they also simply give the deputies kind of carte blanche to run around and do what they want. Out in the county, when is the county police force going to be held accountable? These are questions to ask all three candidates, particularly since someone like Crone had 4 years to try and do it. Coonerty passed repressive laws in 1994 that, of course, were the sitting ban that prompted many people to sit down in protest. And
sitting there and the cops bashing their batons against their hands and saying, "Hey, buddy, this one's for you. You better move on."
Well, I remember one man's ribs being broken, a man named Jason, and another woman miscarrying after being struck in the stomach with a truncheon. And
that was not the good old days.
When Kennedy was the mayor and Coonerty was the main force,
Kennedy.
Coonerty the elder was the main force behind the downtown ordinances. So anything else you want to say, Craig?
No, I'll go back to listen to radio.
All righty. Thanks, man. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Robert Norse. In the studio with me is Leon Limas. He's perhaps going to do a little rapping. If you like rapping at all there, Leon. Wait, we got another call first before you rap. Let's take the caller. What's up, caller?
Oh, Robert.
Yes.
Hold on. Hey, this is V-Man.
Hey, V-Man.
You missing your car?
Yes, sir.
What happened to it?
It was stolen about between 3 and 4 from parking lot number 4 behind Logos.
Today?
Yes. You see,
was that today?
Yes.
In the afternoon. So, because I saw your car last night.
Yeah, well, my car has been around until 4 o'clock. In fact, there have been sightings in 5 different spots because I'm a mobile kind of guy, and I parked at a number of different places. But the last place from which it disappeared was parking spot right near the porta potty in parking lot number 4, where the Food Not Bombs usually has its deal there.
My sighting will probably be.
But thank you for your sighting.
Good luck finding that.
Keep those eyes peeled.
Alrighty.
Thanks, man. Yes, so definitely call in if you see a lonely-looking car covered with bumper stickers, wherever it may be. It's I guess an 88 Chevy Nova, if I'm not mistaken. I may be remembering a previous car, but it's got bumper stickers all over it, and there's only one or two of those in town. Now there's apparently one less. Anyway, so what we got here is, first let's take a brief musical break. Actually, a rap break. Do you want to take a rap break or a musical break, Len? Here's a rap break.
So everybody in the place needs to understand we need to stand up for our rights, verbally speak it out, because we got the right. We can't let these guys just push us around just because they're authorities. They got to understand. They need to come through with the knowledge that they just there to protect us and not there to push us around with the guns. We're unarmed, we're peaceful, we're just looking for a movement. We're coming through with the right to speak, so you can't regulate on us, man. You need to understand this is the United States of America, coming through in the new era, 2006. It's time to stand up for the rights and just take what's rightfully ours. Don't let these guys push you around. Don't turn the other cheek anymore. There's power in your voice. Use it. Coming through, don't abuse it. Yo, everybody's just taking authority, taking your rights away from you just because you don't have the right attitude. You're just not. And I'm tired of Santa Cruz losing its liberal. You know what I'm saying? It used to be liberal. Now it's like a front. You know?
I'm all pretty damn tired of that. Thank you.
It's like a front. You know what I'm saying? Everybody knows Santa Cruz as being liberal.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Now it's starting to just
right.
We're liberal Santa Cruz.
The stink of spoiled fish is getting a little heavy. Here's some more from the sidewalks on the same day. When was it? I think it was Saturday, thereabouts. We had this protest. This was a protest called the Parking Lot Panic Overflow Zone. We were talking about creating an area where people could train, since it's going to be illegal to go into a parking garage when it rains, and illegal to actually, even if you have a car, you won't be able to be there for more than 15 minutes after the law passes on Tuesday, and a month passes. That's how long it takes for the law to go into effect. Tuesday City Council meeting. We're going to have a protest coming up on that Tuesday in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. That's what I was saying about the Coonerties, because there are two Coonerties involved in two bad laws. The first bad law, of course, the parking garage paranoia law, which says you cannot enter a parking garage or parking lot number 9 across from the Elm Street Mission on Elm Street without a vehicle. So you've got to have a responsible vehicle with you to take care of you in case you want to enter any of these garages. There's an exception. If you walk directly through, you can. If you have a permit, you can. If you're a city employee on city business, you can. And there's a rather vague exception if you're engaged in some kind of posted free speech activity. They'll tell you what you can do and what you can't. And, of course, for me, this is very abusive. I've talked about this ad nauseum on the air. There's now a petition online you can sign. Go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Indie Media. They finally, thank you very much, Indie Media, a section in which the parking garage paranoia law is actually center stage and a full feature. So thank you very much. It's taken 4 months to have that happen, but I'm glad it has happened. And that you can sign a petition there, an online petition against it. I think I see a caller calling in. Again, this demonstration will be on Tuesday at 2:15 in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. We're going to be fighting two laws, and I'll talk about the second in a moment. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Leon.
Hey, Robert. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. I had a question for you about the fear-mongering psychology that's being used on City Hall. What is their thinking when they're making another law like this? What is driving them to make this law, in your opinion?
The specific things they say they're concerned about, that is to say that Matt Farrell of the Public Works Department, the Downtown Commission that this law went before and was approved 5-1, actually 5-2, the absent member later came out against it. is that parking workers, parking attendant, parking people who clean up the parking garages have a number of complaints. Some of them sound legitimate, but people yelling at them, throwing things at them, cleaning up needles, poo-poo, pee-pee, seeing illegal activities like necking in cars, and people masturbating on all fours. That happened once, supposedly. People camping, illegally sleeping. Women feeling unsafe because groups of men make rude remarks or threaten them or hulk over them. The very occasional assault, there haven't been many assaults, I think two or three a year or something.
Yeah, but most of those were fist fights. I haven't heard of one sexual assault in 5 years in any public parking area.
Well, I don't know the details for the last 5 years. I know the stats the police gave did not involve arrest records, so we can't see who was actually arrested for any of this stuff. They only involve what's called calls for service, of which there were 541 for the entire year in four garages, of which only 140 of those were actually for any specific, quote, criminal or quasi-criminal behavior. Because is camping criminal behavior? Well, I suppose in Santa Cruz, survival camping is a crime.
Well, how do these parking attendants rate? I mean, if a cop has to see somebody peeing on the sidewalk and a person in the public, how do these parking attendants rate special privilege where they get immunity from life or immunity from the reality? This is a form of insanity.
Well, it's of course privileges for the staff, in the sense that in this city, the city council really isn't worth a damn, but it doesn't really count for a damn. They come and go based upon electoral, the election of the moment, although they seem to keep recycling. Rotkin has been recycling, and so is Matthews, and so is Fitzmaurice. They're all recycled council members, or many of them are. But the fact of the matter is the real power in the city is with City Manager Dick Wilson, with Redevelopment Czarina Seal Cirillo, with Danette Shoemaker, the head of the Parks and Rec Department, with Chief Howard Scarry of the Police Department. These people don't leave their career. They stay there. And John Barisone, our city attorney, they run the city.
Let me ask you this. Parking attendants come into the parking lot, are not most of them inside of vehicles and cars? Are not most of them driving? And when I observed them, almost everybody in that parking lot that was working for the city or working around the city was in a vehicle.
Well, I don't know the answer to that caller, except that I suspect that if they have to clean the lots, they probably get out of their vehicles to do it. And much of this activity, or some of it, may happen late at night when people aren't around, and they feel even less safe. So what their theory is, if you tell everybody you can't come into the parking lot unless you have a vehicle and you're parking your vehicle, and in that circumstance, you have to leave within 15 minutes, they believe this will both reduce the threat to them and reduce the threat to the general public insofar as that threat exists. Now, some of us dispute that, and we say the less eyes in the parking lot, the worse it's likely to be.
Every single night I've been near one of those parking lots, I've never seen one parking attendant past 7 o'clock. So, I mean, if they're afraid of night, maybe they should actually work a night so they can't be afraid.
Well, I think they claim that they do work at night, at least. That was the testimony of several.
That's a lie. That's got to be a flat-out lie.
I don't know. I tend to believe them because I haven't been there, throughout every night. I don't know what their schedule is. I don't think it would profit them to lie about that. But, I don't know the accuracy of it, so
well,
I can't vouch for it.
Let me give an example. One day there was a dispute by a man named Kennedy who was sitting on the city council. He claimed that there were like 52 parking benches, and then he said it got reduced to 48. Well, we actually physically counted the parking benches and found out there was like 24. He had been lying for a period of 6 months until one day one of the activists said, oh, let's count the parking benches. And they actually did a physical count. Now, I'm claiming that these people don't work nights. I think this is a lie. I think they barely get out of their vehicles. And I think this is another scam on the public, and we need somebody monitoring those parking lots to figure out what the hell these people are up to.
Well, I would say that if you do monitor them and you have a report to make, please come to city council and come to the protest at 2:15 on the day the city council meets, Tuesday, May 23rd, in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz, and join us. I would also encourage you to go to Matt Farrell, who's the kind of the little czar of the parking seat, and he's over in Public Works, and ask him, you know, can you give me more details on the schedules of these people? I mean, I'm frankly skeptical they work at night. What's the story? Give me more specifics, and he may either persuade you or not.
Well, let me tell you one last thing before I go.
Yeah.
The one thing I did observe is they were chalking tires ferociously. And anyone that was past 3 hours or past a certain time, they would swoop in like about 5 minutes after the 3 hours and give them citations, $20 to $30 citations per car.
No, I haven't got much sympathy for that either. But I probably think that you're talking about a different group of people than those who clean the parking lots.
Okay, but still, I mean, those were the predominant people I saw going in and out of the parking lot, and none of them ever said they were, because they felt intimidated or threatened. So
right.
How can an attendant?
Well, they don't have to deal with people who are rather surly about having parking workers say to them, "You can't sleep here because it's illegal," or "You have to move, get out of here." You know, people who are displaced by parking cleaners may be more surly than those. Although people who get tickets aren't too happy either. I got to admit that.
I know, but I mean, if you're getting a ticket, you could be outraged and be up in the guy's head. I just think that chicken shit people should not be allowed to make laws to protect their chicken shit ass when it affects the general condition of the public.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Bye.
Alrighty. Yeah, I don't feel it's appropriate for parking lot workers and police to make the laws. And, of course, I will be told by Mike Rotkin, they aren't making the laws, we're making the laws, after careful deliberation. Of course, the deliberation does not include any police stats on arrests, any police stats on crime outside the parking structure, so that we can get some indication of whether there really is a crime wave in the parking lots. It doesn't include any assertion of parking of the crime situation over a period of time, so we can see if things are growing or shrinking. It doesn't really go to the basic issue of, traditionally in Santa Cruz, if you want to sit and read a book in your car or do your homework or even snooze during the day when it's legal to sleep, God help us, not at night after 11 o'clock, that's illegal, even in a vehicle, even a legally parked vehicle of your own, which you own. That's completely illegal in Santa Cruz, thanks to the Rotkin Matthews City Council. But during the day, it's legal to sleep. So you can't rest waiting for a relative to come off of work. You can't wait for your girlfriend past 15 minutes. Why is all this innocent behavior going to be sacrificed for the anxiety, supposed crime problems that aren't even documented? I mean, to me, it makes no sense. And I said that before, and I'll say that again, and we'll be saying that again in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz at 2:15 on Tuesday, May 23rd. Come on down. There'll be some hot food. Joe Schultz is supplying food. Thank you, Joe. Becky Johnson may be there with her scroll of many... she's got a scroll that shows 101 things, or is it 1,001 things you can't do anymore in a parking lot or garage. Actually, lots have been cut out of this. You're going to be allowed to do them in the lots. You can steal cars in the lots, but you can't sleep in a vehicle or read a book in a vehicle past 15 minutes in a parking garage if this law passes, as it's likely to. You can also call City Council to talk about this law, to say no thanks, to ask for more stats, 420-5020. And I want to thank all the Huff members and everybody who's been doing work to bring this law into public light. It includes people like Tulin Osdigger, the lawyer for the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, who sent a letter to the City Council saying if this law passes, it's likely challengeable, legally vulnerable, and we have, you know, and letting us know that there are attorneys in nearby cities who might be, unlike our local chicken shit attorneys, willing to challenge this law. So, and I also want to thank workers like Becky Johnson, workers like Bob Patton, who have been spending lots of time putting out flyers, going from person to person, informing the public about this issue. Thanks to everybody who's been doing that. We need to do it more. Also, students have jumped on board, Cabrillo students. The president of the Cabrillo student body, James, and the president of the Cabrillo Democrats, student Democrats, both came out. Their organizations both came out. I think with the Democrats organization and James as an individual came out against this law and publicly did so on Becky Johnson's Club Cruise TV show, which, by the way, is a Oftentimes got some really interesting stuff on it. I interviewed those two people last time, and unfortunately it probably won't be played until after this law gets set in concrete, unless a lot of people come to city council and say no, or a lot of people plan for some nice, peaceful civil disobedience. If we start, you know, making plans to ticket every single tourist who stays longer than 15 minutes, and we start suggesting things like boycotting businesses downtown that are pushing for these laws, or if we set up what I said, where parking overflow zones, so people instead of, because you can't be in a garage, let's go stand under the awnings over there. You know, if we can think of creative ways to challenge this, who knows? Maybe we can actually turn back this tide. In fact, we won a victory. They were going to make lots, all the parking lots, and there are, I count, 19 of them. I think Matt Farrell's system is to count 15. I guess some are not in the downtown area technically, but they're all pretty much within a 5 or 7 or 8 block range. That would have been 8 to 10 square blocks. We've reduced it now to about 3 or 4 square blocks, because now the only thing that's going to be excluded under the current, the city council is talking about, is the 4 parking garages that are downtown and the homeless parking lot number 9, right across from the Union Grove Music and the Elm Street Church, if you know that one on Elm Street. That was put into this at the last minute as a SOP because Ryan Coonerty was so upset that they removed the lots from the law. The reason they removed the lots was because the ACLU locally, and I tip my hat to the ACLU in part for doing this, although they're somewhat contradictory. If you can't really support removing the lots, if you don't support removing the garages too from this stupid law, you know, you should just eliminate all this and go back to the drawing board and say, there are problems that, you know, parking workers have. Let's talk about those problems, you know. Let's talk about better lighting. Let's talk about citizen patrols. Let's talk about maybe monitoring people. Let's talk about real police patrols for real criminal behavior. Let's talk about alternate places for people to sleep so they don't have to go into parking garages like this. Let's talk about giving parking workers cell phones so they can immediately dial in. Let's talk about setting up a certain number that they can dial immediately and get a fast police response if there's a real problem. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can be talked about, but that aren't being talked about because John Barrasoni, the city attorney, some beat officers, headed perhaps by Sergeant Flippo, I'm not sure if he was the beat sergeant involved, he's one of them downtown, and the parking workers and Matt Farrell all got together and said, it's time for another law. Maybe it's time for another election, and that's what they're looking at. I don't know, because another law with no new resources is not going to protect people anymore. Let's see what else we got on this tape here. Oh, yes. Well, I want to, before I do that, there's a second law coming up at City Council, and that'll be on Tuesday as well. That is a victory on our part because you may remember the Fuck the Pigs case. The Fuck the Pigs case is not about sexual ecstasy with barnyard porkers. It is rather expression of outrage against the police, a sign that a man, John Maurer, had in his cap after he was repeatedly harassed by police downtown. And he won the case, and all his attorney wanted was an apology and an opportunity for the city to change the law, which says you can't panhandle with profane and abusive language, to remove the word profane, because if you have the word fuck in your cap, it shouldn't make any difference. You know, I mean, this is 2006, not 1886. You know, we're not in the middle of Victorian society here. And the city attorney arrogantly said no, and Junk Justice Joseph, the commissioner who was reviewing the case, refused to have a constitutional hearing on it. So attorney Paul Sanford took it into federal court and won a federal ruling, in essence, behind the scenes, that the federal judge told John Barrasoni, city attorney, you either change the law or we will change it for you. And so John and all his legal eagles got together, and they're bringing it back to city council with some changes. The changes are not terribly significant. They're saying they realize that now they can't arrest you for having a sign that says fuck if you're also panhandling at the same time. That's not the problem with the panhandling law. The problem with the panhandling law is it is outrageously overbroad. In some cases, it's unconstitutionally vague, and it's incredibly prone to selective enforcement. Just like you heard this little deal with Officer Albert and the commercial, non-commercial display for the folks who are giving out T-shirts with their artwork on it for donation. Here's the panhandling laws set up all kinds of forbidden zones along Pacific Avenue. You cannot panhandle anywhere within 14 feet of a business, for instance, which means that on Pacific Avenue, on one side of the street, at certain locations, you can panhandle, but everywhere else in town, that is anywhere on any sidewalk near any business, it's illegal to have a sign that says, need food. Or please, do you have a dime? And it's also illegal to have a silent sign after dark. You can't ask for money or have a silent sign anywhere in Santa Cruz after dark. This is supposedly to stop abusive panhandling. I'm sorry, this is abuse of panhandlers, is what this is. It's abusive toward poor people. It's an attempt to sacrifice and conceal the needs that are happening in this community so that the businesses won't be embarrassed. It has nothing to do with the guy who comes and says, give me some money, fucker! That's covered under existing law, and it could even be covered under a scaled-down panhandling statute, which is what Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, was talking about and recommending. Maybe someone will call in and talk about what Huff did recommend. I don't have that recommendation with me. Actually, I might have it somewhere. I'm going to check around. I was able to save one bag from my stolen car. Be on the lookout for a car covered with bumper stickers, folks. Give me a call, 423-HUFF. A free dinner, at least, if you can find that damn car. Don't bother messing with the people who stole it. Just get the car back. You can also call into the show and talk about real issues, 427-3772. A lot of issues to talk about. Anyway, this law is coming back. The panhandling law is coming back for essentially what the city calls correction, I'm calling it an attempt to essentially reassert it, to say, yes, this crazy, stupid panhandling law with all these aspects, you can't do it after dark, you can't do it in a group of two, you can't do it from a seated position, all these restrictions which essentially provide incredible selective enforcement opportunities for people like Pam Bechtel and the other officers downtown. They're essentially reaffirming this law by essentially just making this very small change in it. And the reason I say that is because here's a situation where they've been told this is unconstitutional, this particular provision of the law. What they should be doing is sending this law to the Downtown Commission or some other less partisan group to really reexamine the law. Maybe the ACLU. They've got the ACLU involved in looking over the guidelines for surveillance of political groups, which is still gone nowhere. What is it, 5 months after Vogel investigated himself? We still have no action on that. That's a deputy police chief investigating the peaceful political activists on first night or last night of last year. We need to have this whole panhandling law looked at again by ACLU and city people and merchants. Sure, have a group of people really look it over, because the reason that only one part of it has been found unconstitutional is because only one part of it has been taken to court. So the city is going to waste our time by going through two readings of this law to put this tiny change in, but when it gets challenged again for something more fundamental, like, you mean you can't have a sign that says, need help after dark anywhere in the city? That's obviously unconstitutional. Then we're going to have to go through this whole process again. Shouldn't have to happen that way. So that's why I think we got protests, in essence, against two Coonerty laws. Neil Coonerty the Elder put through the panhandling law to begin with in 1994, and Ryan Coonerty the Younger is trying to put through this law that makes it illegal to sit in your car for 16 minutes in a parking garage. And if you're a poor person or just an ordinary person, cannot enter a parking garage, say to help an old lady with groceries, to help an old guy hobble out of the place, to talk to a friend, this is ridiculous. And it's repressive. You're trying to put little cops inside everybody's heads. Everybody has to have a stopwatch with them or a wristwatch to say, how long have I been here? 15 minutes. Gotta go. I mean,
I might break the law.
Oh, we got a criminal here in the studio. Please be advised. So, if you would like to call in and talk about this or about other things you've seen, the phone number here is 427-3772.
So, it's now about 10 to 4. Looney Balloonie is giving away balloons for a donation, and I'm back here at the parking lot panic area. Everybody's panicking out, or perhaps not panicking out. And Let's see what we got here. Yes, we have this.
Ryan Cooter, he's in the midst of the Zone Kids while we're not in the Santa Cruz.
Ah, this is your musician VP, are you not?
I think so, last time I looked.
And where's your guitar, woman?
In my car.
Ah, nearby and ready to roll, perhaps.
Right there.
Right across the street. Wow, at only 60 cents, 75 cents an hour. Parking meters downtown. We're actually moving to the Bookshop Santa Cruz in about 5 minutes.
Very good idea.
Yes.
With Susan Brackenberry.
Susan, we're back here at the parking lot panic table. It's about 4 o'clock. Well, what do you think of this parking lot law? And you just signed a petition opposing it.
Right. I think that it's a ridiculous law criminalizing people who want to congregate as a community, be it just hanging out and talking with your friends or coming together and doing music or getting together.
Parking lots and garages are to be regulated for the purpose of parking cars. These people can go to the park or into one of our fine cafes. Now, what is your problem with that, madam?
Well, you know, not everyone has access to going into the fine cafes, and not everyone can get to the park.
Don't get the dough, it's time to go.
Yeah, well, that's ridiculous. That's fascism right there.
That's what we call modern American society.
Yeah, that's what we call end capitalism to fascism. That's what we call it.
A commie, get it.
Well,
how about women? Now, this is supposed to be to protect women from people who are lurking in the parking lots. Now, what about those people lurking that might get you?
Well, you know, I think as a woman, I'm always alert to the fact that, you know, in this society, I have to take care of myself in terms of safety and make sure that I'm safe. I think that if there are less people, there's more chance of lurking people to be around. If there are less people around, there's more chance to be a lurker, a someone who...
The propaganda that these so-called huff people put out. Huff, who are they? Who knows? But, you know, is that really true? Is it your own idea? Do you feel more comfortable in there? More, you know, hulking men in the shadows of the parking lot. Wouldn't you rather have a nice law, a little sign that says no trespassing here unless you are parking your vehicle?
No.
No loitering.
No, I would rather have community members that I've seen around, even if I don't know them, I would feel safer having a congregant of people as opposed to having something that is empty, void of people, where actually people could be lurking somewhere behind a parked car or whatever.
But what about the poor parking lot attendants who have to clean up the poo and the piss and watch people masturbating on all fours?
Well, I think that's
quote,
a different
Leslie Scalagata, SEIU.
That is a different problem. That problem has to do with the society as a whole not incorporating homeless people into society and having a place for them to actually live, affordable housing, places for people to clean up.
Hey, Mike Lubkin, our former mayor, and some say the shadow mayor, has assured us that Santa Cruz is one of the most foremost cities of its size doing what it can for the homeless people. Are you suggesting that somehow we're deficient in what we do?
Yes.
Well, certainly we're deficient, but this is a national problem, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, it's a national problem.
So, next issue, moving right along.
Yes, I must be moving right along. I have to go.
We've been talking with
Susan Brackenberry.
Thanks, Susan. Listen to me, Balloonhead. What's your name?
My name is David the Didgeridoo.
And D.D., you're carrying a large bowl with you, some water, and a bizarre-looking didgeridoo, in a didgeridoo case, with a very balloonish-looking hat, multicolored. You say police are messing with people? What is that supposed to mean?
We're a little bit paranoid out here. People can't even play any music without feeling like the terrorists are coming to attack us because we're just trying to get our lunch money.
Now, wait a minute. This is protection against the terrorist musicians who would ruin the businesses by dragging the whole society down to its level.
Yeah, as they say.
Now, have you been actually hassled for playing the didgeridoo?
No.
So you're actually just making idle chatter and foolish, spurious complaints against our men and women in blue.
Not exactly. They actually had messed with me a few years ago, but ever since I made a big deal about it and I got a lot of support for my didgeridoo playing, they've dropped it because they know I got family, lawyers, and friends that care about me and they care about this community, and we're going to change that here.
So didgeridoo playing is okay on the streets of Santa Cruz?
Yes, sir.
For you for you and everybody?
For everybody.
You haven't seen people being harassed?
Not didgeridoo players.
All right, so get a didgeridoo player and you may be in the swing. Thank you, sir. Yep.
And now we have on the line a live person, the infamous Bob Patton, the Human Rights Organization, who has been braving the bureaucrats of the Homeless Service Center. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for giving me a chance just to do a little report here. A couple items. One, Bernard Klitzner and I, both members of the Human Rights Organization, did meet with and give a little presentation, an update to the board members of the Homeless Service Center at 115 Coral Street. And they allowed us about 5 or 6 minutes and showed some interest, particularly around the Jones versus the Los Angeles, City of Los Angeles suit that declared their sleeping ban cruel and unusual and may come to our town soon or nearby. And we did an additional report on ongoings with the lots and garages law, and now it's the lot number 9 and garages law.
True enough.
And appeal to them to maybe not necessarily as Homeless Service Center, but as board members and community members speak out on this. There seem to be some joking around about, you know, who are they going to arrest next? What are they going to arrest them for next? And this and that. So there was a little bit of a sympathetic ear there, at least an undertone of it. But, you know, officially, you don't get that from Ken Cole or the board itself.
Ken Cole, of course, is the executive director of
Homeless
Service Center.
Now, but it used to be acting director. And I did give him a chance to make clear what his statements were to Matt Farrell and Julie Shattuck during the times when we were addressing this then lots and garages.
Of course, Matt Farrell and Julie Shattuck. Julie Shattuck is the chair of the Downtown Commission. Matt Farrell is the kind of the man who's been pushing this.
Yeah, both of them on the same advisory board.
Parking garage paranoia law. And Matt Farrell told me that he had had a conversation with Ken Cole, in which Ken Cole, in essence, said, oh, well, if as long as, you know, the parking garages are not really suitable places for shelter for homeless people, and probably, you know, as long as the law will be fairly and evenly, sorry, I got to hold this straight face here, enforced. Go ahead.
Right. Now, Ken Cole's clarification was that he was called independently at very different times by both of those individuals, Matt and Julie, and gave them basically the same story, which is their position is to get independent housing for homeless individuals. And if there is a safety issue in the lots and garages, then their clients are at risk also. However, he did not verify that they had any concern at all about selective enforcement that I do remember the conversation moving in the direction during the when they were doing the advisory board stuff that there was a concern about selective enforcement. However, you know, he didn't clarify that for me. I may follow through on yet.
I think his comments on safety are so apropos. I mean, people are so much safer out there in the rain than they are in the parking garages. How can one doubt the wisdom of Ken Cole on this issue?
Then I went on to another item I want to say. If we're done with Ken Cole and the Homeless Service Center, there's one other item I want to appeal to your listeners to. If anybody has a connection with the Elm Street Mission, and I did call their telephone number, talk to the pastors, what it is the attorney from the ACLU named Don Zimmerman, he has sent an email to not just myself, but I think it was Glenn Rabinald, who initiated this conversation with him, at least electronically, about him crafting legislative intent. If someone authorized speaking on the mission that could contact him by tomorrow on making an exemption, some relief for under the so-called free speech area designation for the needs of the mission for their clients while waiting to be fed. There I found the right spot. Perhaps the council could be persuaded to direct police department and city attorneys to do a very narrow described limitation on enforcement as to peaceful assembly.
Who's proposing this?
Well, this is Don Zimmerman. It's the first time he's ever said the word or wrote the word homeless.
Well, that's quite a historic moment. But the problem is it doesn't mean shit because, you know, I mean, I'm sure that the city will have no problem granting an exemption for a two-hour period because there's a permit process that they claim is already in effect. The real question is why should anybody need a permit to enter a parking garage or that parking lot? It's ridiculous.
Exactly. But I wanted to give
abusive.
You that... If anybody really knows any of the pastors there, I did give a call, but it's just message phone stuff. Don would like to hear from them, and he would help craft that exemption that may satisfy at least their, you know, whatever it is, 2 hours twice a week or something thing.
I think it's good that Don is dipping his tiny toe into the homeless waters, no question about it. I mean, you know, he actually is the person whose initial interest in this, I think, resulted in it being taken to the ACLU, and the ACLU's coming out with a statement that said, you know, it sounds kind of shaky around the lots, and of course it was equally shaky around the garages because they used the similar stats. There's no indication of a crime wave in either place.
Yeah, but if Glenn is listening or if any of the folks that actually have contact with the Elm Street Mission there, gets to Don or gets to me or to you or somebody can get him to Don. I can give Don.
Yeah, give a call to the Huff line, 423 Huff, if you've got any if you want to hook up Don Zimmerman of the ACLU with the Elm Street Mission so they can do their 2 hour permit. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Now, again, I don't see any, and I see this as, a, you know, sort of like asking, you know, getting a special safe conduct from the Nazis for Jews under certain circumstances, which no doubt they did. I'm sure they had little permits for Jews at different times. But the fact of the matter is it has no real bearing on the broader issue, except that it shows Zimmerman is taking an interest in homeless issues, which I think because his small interest in the parking garages and lots eventually led to the Rotkin motion to remove the lots entirely except for lot number 9. I think that that's a significant thing, and I commend you for your good work, Uncle Bob.
Yeah, I got to keep things stirred up. You know,
now, are you
going to
be
going on? I got to look under the rock. You know, what was my original nickname you gave me was a Rubberneck Robert.
Rubberneck Robert.
You know,
my goodness.
Something smells or something's making a noise. I'm going to have to check it out.
Roughneck Robert, a rubberneck. Are you coming to the protest at the bookshop Santa Cruz 2:15 on Tuesday? What's your plan on that?
Probably not Tuesday. Wednesday are big work days for me. So I'll probably see you on Tuesday at the. You know, city council meeting.
We're doing a protest, you know, at 2:15, and then we're going to march to the city council after holding the two Coonerties accountable for these two bad laws.
Yeah, I may not be able to make it that early, but if I can, I will.
You're going to miss the tasty chow from Jumbo Gumbo Joe Schultz.
Oh, Joe's. But hey, well, you might have talked me into it then.
Hey.
I'm gonna bring my ladle down and get some good grubs there.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, Robert, thanks for letting me do the update there. You got any more questions for me?
Human Rights Organization probably continues to meet 145 on Saturdays at 115 Coral Street.
Exactly, and people want to check out our website. It's www.humanrightsorg.org. So you got two orgs there to work with. Thanks, Robert. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Bob. Phone line's open, 427-3772. In the studio with me, the occasional street rapper, that man about Free Radio Santa Cruz, Leon. You can be a part of this incredible interchange if you want to call in, 427-3772. In the meantime, here's a little side music for you to ponder.
Technology, you gotta watch out for the double cross. So don't put too much detail in your email. never make your thoughts known on the phone. Mailing me a letter really isn't that much better. And you know someone might come and bug my home. So write it down on lettuce, tie it round a stone, toss it through my window when you're sure I'm home alone. High kick won't affect us, 'cause I'll clean off the soil, then I'll eat those words with vinegar and oil. I kept them home in the kitchen, but they really made a mess to my distress. I tried sending a smoke signal, but you had to keep a vigil, and the fire department liked it even less. My invisible ink spilled in the sink. I suck at languages like double Dutch and such. Sat writing secret code till I felt my brain explode. So here's a better way to keep in touch. Just write it down on lettuce, tie it round a stone, toss it through my window when you're sure I'm home alone. High tech won't affect us, 'cause I'll clean off the soil, then I'll
That was Annie and the Vets singing Peace to Power, Vinegar and Oil from their CD, one of the few CDs I have left, some of which disappeared in my vehicle, which has disappeared today. Be on the lookout for bumper sticker number one, and you'll make me happy. In the meantime, give a call to 427-3772. It's the Not Missing Free Radio Santa Cruz. Not missing because of your support. If you want to support us, do so one way or another at 427-4523. Here's a story from Counterpunch, Fred Gardner's Pot Shots, the Marketing of Cannabis Americana. Kind of interesting story, so I thought I would run it by you. Michael Krawitz, founder and curator of the Cannabis Museum, has obtained via eBay a promotional booklet attesting to the widespread medical use of cannabis in the U.S. a century ago. The handsomely designed and printed 16-page booklet was published by Park Davis & Company to market its Cannabis Americana to doctors and pharmacists. Just as drug companies nowadays do when they have a potential blockbuster emerging from the pipeline, Park Davis knocked the competition, Cannabis Indica, and invoked science to peddle its wares in 1910. Under a first-page headline defining Cannabis Americana as cannabis sativa grown in America, the text gets right to the point. Quote, Much has been written relative to the comparative activity of cannabis sativa grown in different climates, cannabis indica, Mexicana, and Americana. It has been generally assumed that the American-grown drug was practically worthless therapeutically, and that cannabis sativa grown in India must be used if one would obtain physiologically active preparations. Furthermore, it has been claimed that the best Indian drug is that grown especially for medicinal purposes, the part used consisting of the flowering tops of the unfertilized female plants, care being taken during the growing of the drug to weed out the male plants. According to our experience, this is an erroneous notion, as we have repeatedly found that the Indian drug, which contains large quantities of seed, is fully as active as the drug which consists of the flowering tops only, provided the seed be removed before percolation. This may reflect the crudeness of their testing system, which the booklet will describe as state-of-the-art. Several years ago, we began a systematic investigation of American-grown cannabis sativa. Samples from a number of localities were obtained and carefully investigated. From these samples, fluid and solid extracts were prepared according to the pharmacocorporeal method and carefully tested upon animals for physiological activity, and eventually they were standardized by physiological methods. Repeated tests have convinced us that cannabis americana, properly grown and cured, is fully as active as the best Indian drug, while on the other hand, we have frequently found Indian cannabis to be practically inert. Before marketing preparations of cannabis americana, however, we placed specimens of the fluid and solid extracts in the hands of experienced clinicians for practical test. And from these men, all of whom had used large quantities of cannabis indica in practice, we have received reports which affirm that they have been unable to determine any therapeutic difference between cannabis americana and cannabis indica. We are therefore of the opinion that cannabis americana will be found equally as efficient as, and perhaps more equally, perhaps more uniformly reliable than cannabis indica obtained from abroad, since it is evident that with a source of supply at our very doors, proper precautions can be taken to obtain crude drug of the best quality. Nomenclature. The proper botanical name of the drug under consideration is cannabis sativa. The Indian plant was formerly supposed to be a distinct species per se, but botanists now consider the two plants to be identical. The old name of cannabis indica, however, has been retained in medicine. Cannabis indica simply means cannabis sativa grown in the Indies, and cannabis americana means cannabis sativa grown in America. Physiological action. The physiological action of cannabis americana is precisely the same as that of cannabis indica. The effects of this drug are due to be chiefly to its action upon the central nervous system. Therapeutic indications. Cannabis americana is employed for the same medicinal purposes as cannabis indica, which is frequently used as a hypnotic in cases of sleeplessness, that is a sleep-producing drug, in nervous exhaustion, and as a sedative in patients suffering from pain. Its greatest use has perhaps been in the treatment of various nervous and mental diseases, although it is found as an ingredient in many cough medicines. In general, cannabis americana can be used when a mild hypnotic or sedative is indicated, as it is said not to disturb digestion, and it produces no subsequent nausea and depression. It is of use in cases of migraine, particularly when opium is contraindicated. It is recommended in paralysis agitans to quiet the tremors, in spasm of the bladder, and in sexual impotence not the result of organic disease, especially in combination with nux vomica and ergot. Dosage, extractum, cannabis americana, 0.01 grams, 1 to 5 grams, and there's some more technological details, advantages, and so forth. There follows a centerfold, graceful drawings of the male and female plants reproduced by a four-color process on one page and a black-and-white photo of Park Davis's Laboratory of Medical Research, a four-story brick building on the bank of the Detroit River. Built in 1902, it was the first lab dedicated to drug company research and reflects Park Davis's stature as industry leader. The second half of the booklet reprints an article entitled A Pharmacological Study of Cannabis Americana by Park Davis researchers E.M. Hofton, H.C. Hamilton, which ran in the American Journal of Pharmacy January 1908. It is, shall we say, lacking in rigor. Hofton's specialty was testing drugs on animals. His method, quote, consists essentially in the careful observation of the physiological effects produced upon dogs from the internal administration of the preparation of the drug under test. It is necessary in selecting the test animals to pick out those that are easily susceptible to the action of cannabis, such as dogs as well as human beings, since dogs as well as human beings vary considerably in their reaction. Talks about the standard dose. Dogs begin to show characteristic action of the drug. Dog loses control of its legs, drops its head. Animal swagger and fall, intoxication being particularly suggestive and striking and so forth. The reason I brought this up, I thought, was because of its I thought it was a positive article. From an early stage of the game when cannabis was still legal in the United States. Cannabis, of course, is marijuana, for those who don't know. And let's see here. We have a caller. Thanks. Maybe this caller isn't stoned. Maybe we are. Hi, you're on Free Radio, cannabis land, so to speak.
Whoa, dude, that was so cool. Thank you for that information.
Are you kidding? Go ahead.
I didn't even know that.
Well, we actually aren't quite finished with it, but go ahead.
Well, I just got done smoking some pot with some Lola Fable, and I was listening to you talking about that.
Right.
And I got this total psychedelic vision of what you were talking about.
Well, I hope you get a vision of other things, such as how to get rid of the city council and how to find my vehicle. Thank you.
I got off on that when you were talking about it.
Fair enough.
Excellent.
Bye-bye. Michael Krawitz is, again, from the same article by Fred Gardner on the Counterpunch website on cannabis, who lives in Virginia, competes on eBay for cannabis-related artifacts with Paul Stanford, who runs clinics in several western states for the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, Ethan Russo, MD, well-known neurologist, and ex-PAT researcher David Watson, co-founder of Hortifarm, whose genetic library jump-started GW Pharmaceuticals, among others. Krawitz is the son of an auctioneer. We're talking about artifacts in the Cannabis Museum, where there's 100,000 cannabis artifacts online at www.cannabismuseum.org. Hopes to have 100,000 there by 2008. This looks like it's not what I thought it was, and I apologize for... reading this without being clearer on it. The details are interesting. There was a letter from a doctor who I'm familiar with, the famous in the cannabis, the marijuana world, Dr. Todd Mikoria, who wrote the first book of medical marijuana papers. And actually, I read that book. I bought it back in the 60s when it first came out. And it was quite a pioneer book. Mikoria wrote it. And what Mikoria found was that safety and efficacy were demonstrated way back in 1908 in these studies around marijuana. The plant hasn't changed, and neither is human physiology. Cannabis should be grandfathered into our national formulary, just as aspirin was after the new regulations were established in 1938. And it was not the best article to show that point, but I read it anyway. You're tuned to Free Radio, or Freak Radio, if you will, at 101.1 FM. I'm going to turn now again to a subject I was following some days ago when I did the Sunday show in Berkeley. Berkeley had a, what would you call it, a... they called out for help to people, and I was one who responded because police were threatening to ticket people giving away free food and clothing in People's Park, which is a park in Berkeley right off Telegraph Avenue, established by the community, seized from the university by the community, and which is still remains, even though it's technically university property, very much protected by activists in the community. And it's a huge park where the University of California has been trying to reassert control by sending in cops to arrest people for sharing free food. And they've been destroying the free box, which is a box where you can leave clothing and pick up clothing. And on this particular Saturday when I went up there, I think it was last Saturday, not too long ago, if it wasn't a week before that, we had a kind of an alert because there was going to be a... the police had announced they were going to arrest people for doing this, and we decided we'd show up and do it. If they wanted to arrest us, fine. Of course, we did show up. We did share clothing and food, at least clothing. I don't know if any food showed up, but I think I may have had a sandwich with me. I don't know. And the cops just sort of smiled and did nothing. And they don't do their stuff at high noon these days. They do it under cover of darkness. And we built other people built, and I contributed to building, the seventh, fifth or sixth or seventh free box this year for clothing and for exchanging items, books and clothing up there. I'm going to play some more of the interviews I did with a disabled guy who was beaten by police when he attempted to wheel himself into the park some weeks before. His name is Dan McMillan. We have a caller first, however. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, it's Andrea. I have a real quick important announcement. Tonight on Voices on Channel 27, it's about running for the 3rd District, and Neil Coonerty and Chris Crone are on here at the same time with some other gentlemen, and if people can't catch it tonight from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m., it'll be re-aired on Saturday night at 7:30, and it's a live call-in. Okay, I'll talk to you later, hon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andrea. Yeah, I actually mentioned that at the beginning of the show, but I'm glad it was mentioned again. From 7:30 to 8:30 on Community TV, there will be the 3 candidates. Jonathan Boutelle, Neil Coonerty, and Chris Crone, who are running for the 3rd District Marty Wormouth seat, and they'll be happening in a couple of weeks. But this discussion is happening tonight. You can get in touch with Community TV. If I knew the number, I would give it out for you to do a call-in there if you'd like to. You can go down to the Community TV studios right across from Zachary's on Pacific Avenue, a block or two from Laurel Street. And they probably will let you in the studio audience, unless they are being mean and nasty about it. We'll see. Or maybe it's, but you know, you can check it out. And indeed, I talked to Bruce Bratton today while my car was being taken, and he will actually be coming on the show at some point in the weeks ahead to give his endorsement and his analysis of the election situation coming up. The candidate he favors is Chris Crone, former mayor, sometime writer for Berkeley Daily Planet, and also he's had an editorial or two in some of the local papers. I've talked about Crone at length. I actually have a lawsuit against Crone and 2 other mayors for repressive behavior at city council. Crone was probably one of the best of the worst in that group, but the real issue for me is what do you want from a Board of Supervisors? That's the real issue we have to ask ourselves and what we have to demand of those candidates. Then when you come into the voting booth, you can choose whoever you want. You can hold your nose, but you have to be asking the right questions first and, more important, confronting the candidates with the right questions. My knowledge of county politics is not what it might be. I have a particular interest in city politics, know a little bit about county politics, and I think HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, will be lining up some questions for the 3 candidates on homeless issues, which they may ignore, they may not, we'll see. And I can give you some more feedback from that in the days ahead. You can also come to HUF meetings if you want. They're small, but sometimes rather interesting. And they happen outside, right outside the courthouse, between the courthouse and the county building in the atrium area next to the coffee cart at 701 Ocean Street. And they happen every Wednesday from 9:30 to 11:30, contrary to what I ineptly posted on indiebay.org the other day. When it got posted on Tuesday. I hope that's changed. In fact, I may want to take a look at that and see if it actually has changed. I think I will, even as we speak. And phone line here, in case you want to call in, is 427-3772. Here's some stuff from Berkeley. Again, we're talking with Dan McMillan, the man who was assaulted by police. His stomach was smashed. He was jumped on. He was sent to the hospital. His 4 and 5-year-old boy were terrified because they had taken down a barricade so he could get into the park, because he's a wheelchair person. I see a caller tried to call in and failed. I'll wait briefly to see if you want to call back. That's an option for you. Also want to announce regarding my legal case. I went to court on Wednesday, and I was, as you know, I'm being, maybe you don't know, I'm charged with disrupting a council meeting at City Council for coming before Mayor Mike Rotkin last summer and having waited in line with everybody else, stepped up the mic to speak for my 2-minute period. Person behind me got 2 minutes, person in front of me got 2 minutes. But Rotkin informed me of his rule, which I knew the rule that he had, which was that you are allowed only a total of 5 minutes on all consent agenda items, and I had spoken on previous items, therefore he was not going to allow me to speak on this item. I told him it violated the Brown Act, he had me arrested, I was brutalized, I was being taken out by Lieutenant Clark. I think I pretty much recovered from the injuries, but there were injuries to my left hand as he dragged me out. He threatened me and repeatedly threatened me with some physical violence in the course of the arrest, and this is the guy who heads internal affairs, Lieutenant Steve Clark. Not a good poster child for Santa Cruz investigations. But typical, you have a you know, a thug and a bully who heads internal investigations, then you have a guy who assigns surveillance to peaceful political groups who then goes and investigates himself on the issue. It's kind of par for the course. Anyway, my trial was slated for Monday. It has been postponed until September. And the reason it's been postponed is because Lieutenant Clark, the guy who arrested me, is the subject of several complaints that were supposed to be viewed by Judge Burdick. But either Burdick did not view those complaints, or else Burdick improperly concealed them from us. And we're going to find that out in a hearing in about a week and a half. And we can't have the trial until September because the person making the declaration that those complaints exist is a district attorney investigator who is currently in Europe. So that's the status of my case right now. And that's where that stands. Here's back to Berkeley and Dan McMullen.
Yeah, looking at a picture of the UC website, UCBD website, it's, 2006, April 30th, 3:41 p.m., Daniel McMullen, white male, 42, arrested for maliciously damaging a road sign, resisting arrest, and two counts of battery against a peace officer, People's Park, to ABH. What is ABH? A bit humorous? Probably not. Subject cited and released. Subject also excluded from campus property for 7 days. Case closed. Case closed. So he's not going to trial for battery?
It doesn't seem like anything's happening. They even took the barricades away. I think they realize they might, you know, if they pursue this, they might have a countersuit on their hands.
They can have a countersuit if they don't pursue it.
I hope they do. I hope Danny pursues it.
Any other thoughts, giggles?
No. Not at the moment.
Is that the weathered Michael Delacour I see approaching?
Yeah, sure is. That's Delacour.
Hey, the 60s are over, Delacour. He has no comment. They're all invisible behind the tree waiting to come out and support us.
Looks like it.
How's it going?
Look, they got rid of the barricade.
Yeah. My friend Kevin went on UCPD's website and got the police report telling Michael Delacour that.
So you don't have a copy of the police report with you?
Just the photocopy that you just read.
That's all there is, that short paragraph.
That's all my friend got, yeah. That was all he got off the website. And.
Thanks, Kevin. Think of the teeming
mass.
Any comments on this whole situation?
Well, I think it's quite obvious that there's a something's going on with Cody's going out of business, and the cops giving tickets out to people jaywalking, and the cops giving people tickets. I heard one vendor today told me the story of somebody was crossing the street about 9 o'clock this morning, and a couple cops handcuffed the guy, made him sit down, and his crime was jaywalking.
It's a pretty serious crime here.
I know it is.
You can actually injure a vehicle if a vehicle has to, you know, get past you, but causes mess if there's blood involved.
Indeed. I think at least his leg should be broken for that offense.
Luckily, with our disabled man, that had already been an injury. So
yes,
it wasn't necessary.
Yes. Somebody else took his place
a
while back, and we do appreciate that. I think it's going to be very important for people to realize the University of California is doing a power grab once again, still ongoing, which they've been doing since they stole this land to begin with, and they're probably going to continue to do it until we finally say, enough is enough, push them out, keep them out, and that's it.
Maybe confiscate the university and take it over, eh?
That's right. We'll pull an eminent domain in reverse.
Now, your name again is?
Crusty Rusty.
And aren't you one of the guys that we've seen pushing these subversive bumper stickers on Telegraph Avenue?
I forced them on people and make them pay me $2 to take them away.
You're an extortionist of no mean talent.
And also a contortionist once in a while, too.
Camera? Thank you.
What?
Comments about the situation?
Like you said, it's not the 60s.
Now, we're all gloomy about the number of protesters, but what about the...
In case you wonder what's going on here, this is a meeting of activists at People's Park noon Saturday, and there were very few of us initially, though the numbers swelled to about 45 or 50, and quite a sizable group of committed people. And it was really initially kind of discouraging, but, you know, this is banter you hear between longtime activists. These are the people who hold the line and keep the police at bay by, in essence, demonstrating that they're not going to be intimidated when police officers are going to arrest you for serving people free food or sharing clothing. And it's something that we all, you know, I think, can take heart from and learn from and perhaps try to emulate, you know. I mean, it's important to assert your rights and to stand up for those basic principles that often you'll find bureaucrats and police officers shortcutting and eliminating. That's what's happening with these laws at city council. That's what happens every day on Pacific Avenue. That's, of course, and when you don't see the mass murder going on, you do in Iraq, the methodical murder as usual. But, you know, it's all part of the same system in a kind of in a very real way. You know, the people who support the downtown ordinances are the same people, actually, ironically, who would say we should get out of Iraq. You know, there's the liberals overseas are, unfortunately, our own reactionaries locally. It's a strange situation. As Leon here in the studio was saying earlier, it's a case where people who have the mask of the liberal, the mask of the progressive, and it's not really a mask in terms of what their stands are in foreign policy or the stands are even on national policy, but when it comes to local policy, and that's where it counts because that's where they have the power, it's a mask. And it doesn't what happens under the mask is repressive support for business interests, giving the police all the power that they want, or maybe some that they don't even want. You know, I mean, what thrills walking up and down harassing, you know, people trying to give out T-shirts with little designs on them that are political designs and, you know, their own artwork. And then having to endure people like me ranting at them and shouting police harassment. That's no fun for a police officer, you know, I don't think. I guess some people think it's, you know, they can be tough and they can deal with all that stuff. And I mean, you know, I suppose. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. I was playing some stuff from Berkeley that it actually sounds a little more obscure than I thought. I'm going to leave it. I did an interview. I interviewed two mayoral candidates up there. But, again, they're on to local Berkeley stuff, which is very parallel to Santa Cruz. Berkeley is a somewhat bigger community. It's also a university community. It's also, at one time, it was a very liberal community, and now it's less so. Let's hear another bit of music while I sort of get ready to say goodbye, because it's getting close to the 8 o'clock hour, which is when I leave. And I believe my show may soon be reduced to, particularly my Sunday show, may be reduced several hours because the station is trying to even out its show times, and they're getting applications from all you listeners out there who want shows. And so when more people ask, those of us with the long shows have to respond to the community. I'm still not persuaded that my show isn't valuable enough to keep over a longer period of time, but it's hard to argue because it's me arguing for my own show. And there are newcomers who've got some good ideas and should have the right to speak up and have space and time to do it. So it's a real conundrum for me. And I'll keep struggling with it as I walk to and from the studio. Maybe I'll even get a hold of a bike. Can you imagine that? What a concept. Driven to take a bicycle ride. Let's see if I have any other announcements to make. There's some interesting stuff on indiebay.org. Let's see here. Going back to the actual situation. I want to thank Becky Johnson, my sometime producer. I'm not quite sure whether she's going to be continuing as producer, going on sabbatical, or leaving, or what's going to be happening. But she's done all kinds of work for this show. It's a real travesty that Free Radio has taken this bizarre ideological position that bans her from acknowledgement that she's a member of the collective. It's just disgraceful. I've said it many a time. I will say it again. And I also noticed Indie Media seems to be, again, maybe removing some of her posts on homeless issues, which is really sad and bad. And people who use Indie Media should speak to them about it, as I do. They Indy Media claimed, you may remember in a long discussion I had with Vinny on the air, that there are hidden posts. You can go there. Well, as of today, I can't find any hidden posts, and there was some discussion on Indy Media in L.A. that those hidden posts are gone. Maybe that's just a temporary thing. I don't know. I haven't heard back from the masters of Indy Media. But you got a good website there in many respects. Let's return the voices that need to be there. And if you got, you know, ideological problems on one issue, please don't move them over onto other issues. Anyway, Huff today, I should say yesterday, had a meeting, and I'm going to read the Huff press release, which was prepared by Becky Johnson. Thanks, Becky, for doing that. Huff calls for the major reform of the soliciting ordinance on Tuesday, May 23rd. From the Santa Cruz City Council, since that's the panhandling ordinance. Since the City Council must rewrite their anti-homeless panhandling law due to a recent loss in federal court, which declared the law unconstitutional, we at Huff urge them to fix the anti-homeless and draconian measures regulating those asking for acts of charity. While asking for spare change is a protected activity under the First Amendment for free speech protections, the courts have ruled that time, place, and manner restrictions are allowed if the government can present a significant government interest, usually a health or safety concern. Huff questions whether any public health or safety concern is addressed by restrictions such as not soliciting from a seated position in groups of two or more or holding a sign asking for food after dark. Actually, these ordinances threaten the health and safety of hungry, homeless people. Huff reminds the citizenry that laws against fraud or assault will still apply, and we support these laws. Huff urges the Santa Cruz City Council to humanize its ordinance against begging, which is undoubtedly violated only by the poorest of the poor, in the following manner. 1. Reduce the 50-foot restriction from a change dispensing machine to 15 feet, so you don't have to sit. It's at the 100-foot area in front of the machine isn't made completely unusable. I'm going to, caller, you're on the air, but I'm going to continue reading. Are you there, caller?
Yeah, go ahead.
2. Remove that from the dusk to dawn prohibition. It's illegal to ask for a dime after dark or have a sign that does. It's ridiculous. Allow people to solicit while in a seated position. They already do, but it's illegal to do so. And actually, people have been hassled under that provision, ironically, by police when it wasn't the law, way back in 2001 when old John Telfair, Mad John as we called him, was told, he's a 65, 70-year-old man, that he had to stand up with his sign because it was illegal for him to sit down. Huff is also asking that people be allowed to solicit in groups of up to 4 people, that they remove all prohibitions against soliciting with a sign, which is completely innocuous. They remove all locations of restriction to prohibited only where they obstruct the sidewalk or a doorway instead of this 14-foot forbidden zone throughout the city. That they strike the section on misleading solicitation, which is a lengthy section which says you can't have a sign up there which says you're homeless if you're not homeless, and puts a whole bunch of restrictions, makes you have to prove all your status there, and has been improperly used by police officers to harass homeless people. And finally, to remove the prohibitions against leaning on public property while soliciting. Yeah, that's for sure. We prefer that the city send this matter to the Downtown Commission for a thorough examination and review first. Reasonable and humane ordinances in other cities can also be studied. Huff will remain available as a community resource for feedback on the proposed language. Thank you, Becky, for putting that out. And
I got a question, Robert.
There, you're still on there, Crow. Any comments, Crow?
Yeah, I do have a lot of comments. Yep. Why was Becky not involved with Radio Free Santa Cruz?
With Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
I have about 5 minutes to get into this. Actually, 3 minutes. So I'm going
to
make it real.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right, let's.
Kind of an injustice, right?
Yeah. I'll be at the 7-Eleven on Chestnut and Laurel in about 15 minutes.
All right. Click that.
All righty. Answer to the question, Becky, this is a very long answer. The short answer is the collective, other than me, decided that she had never really been a member, even though they'd had the radio station at her house and she'd risked arrest, risked child CPS activity against her, but for having an illegal radio station on at least 2 occasions for long periods of time. She has been the producer of my show. Worked with me on this show over the years. Every time it comes on, she has documented the show. She's been to, I would say, at least 6 to 12 meetings, maybe as many as I have. And they decided because of a problem that developed around essentially her right-wing associations and the fact that she was accused of passing on information to the Horowitz website, namely the name of one of the free radio broadcasters. It was, for me, a super paranoid, Stalinistic mentality. Anybody and everybody knows who we are, really. And it wasn't a wise thing for her to do. I think she apologized for it afterward, not in the way that she should have, in my view, but it's a bunch of bullshit, frankly, and the collective should reverse that decision, just as indie media should reverse its censoring policy. It's ideologically based around the Palestinian issue. Becky takes a position that is considerably to the right in my lexicon of everybody, most everybody in the collective that I know of, and it has evoked some very strong responses. That's kind of the real. That's my view of it, and I'm sorry I don't have time to really debate it tonight. It's been debated ad nauseum. I can talk about it more at other times. I want to thank you all for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm going to try to prepare for the coming of the Uncle Dennis, who's likely to show up here at any moment. I was going to call Richard Quigley, and I realized I should have and hadn't. He's got some great information. He's a man challenging the helmet law and also trying to provide civil rights for disabled people who are being harassed. Jerry Henry, out at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, has not only been recently arrested, he has been assaulted, and a restraining order by his assaulter has been gotten against him. He's a minister and a fellow who has been banned from the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center coffee roasting company out there for the most ridiculous of reasons for a long period of time. Mainly it's because he looks homeless and he stands up for his rights and the rights of young people out there. Okay, so that's going to be it for the moment. I'm going to try to check the city council agenda tomorrow, the next day, so I can give you more information on what's coming up on Tuesday. You can check it yourself by going online, Google for Santa Cruz City Council. You can come on down to the protest on Tuesday. If you want to get in touch with Huff to help organize against the parking garage paranoia law, you can do that too. Call 423-HUFF, and we'll go and do it together. In the meantime, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobsky's Broadsides.
There's a woman trapped inside my body. I hear her crying at night. She's longing to be free. But I can't let her, 'cause I'm a bad old cowboy. And a cowboy in a party dress just ain't right. From my Stetson on down to my spurs, I wear only what you think a man prefers. But when I see a woman dressed in high heel pumps and furs, Lord knows I bet I want to change my outfit for her. 'Cause there's a woman trapped inside my body. I hear her crying at night. She's longing to be free. But I can't let her, 'cause I'm a bad old cowboy. And a cowboy in a party dress just ain't right. In a bar room, drinking with my friends, every head turns to the tall blonde walking in. And as they hoot and holler and address her with their eyes, in my mind I gather up her things and try home on her side. 'Cause there's a woman trapped inside my body. I hear her crying at night. She's longing to be
but I can't let her, 'cause I'm a bad old cowboy, and a cowboy in a party dress just ain't right. Not a cowboy in a party dress just ain't right.
And welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm your Uncle Dennis, sitting here in the studio until 11 o'clock tonight. We've got lots of great music coming up in just a minute. Wanted to let you know that Earth First Update's coming up at 9 o'clock. We will open the Brew of the Week in just a few short minutes from now. And, of course, 10 o'clock, our mystery group. Lots of great stuff coming up. I did want to put out the following notice. If you have seen a car that is totally covered, I believe it's an old Honda Accord, but if you've seen a car totally covered with bumper stickers, call the station or call the Santa Cruz Police Department, because that car has been stolen. Robert Norse's car was stolen. So if you see a car completely covered with bumper stickers, it's a stolen car, and do the appropriate action. You can either call me, you can call the Huff line at 427-HUFF or 423-HUFF, I forget which one it is, or you can call the police, because let's get Robert's car back. The guy's kind of pathetic walking around with a plastic bag.